Hello and welcome to the Pod2Pod podcast, where we explore the news, services, technologies, and advice that will help podcast producers and consumers. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm your host, Matthew Passy. On this episode, we are talking to the content director. I think that's his title. I don't remember exactly what it was, but a guy who has put together and done some amazing work and built a podcasting Goliath. It's Jason Hoke of How Stuff Works. And if you don't already know, How Stuff Works has done over 650 million downloads in their podcast, and they are just titans in the podcasting industry. But not only is Jason with How Stuff Works, I mean, this guy is a content specialist. Before here, he was with WWE, you know, that little organization that knows how to put out good content and entertainment, and Discovery, another huge player in the content creation space. This is a really important conversation that I think all of our podcast producers need to listen to, because it's not about the technical podcast creation. It's about content, and that's what we are. We are content creators, and podcasting just happens to be the medium that we focus on. But pay attention, because what Jason says is content, you know, the medium dictates the content. So whatever you're doing, you know, podcasting may not be around forever. I think it's going to be around for a long, long time. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, other things are going to come along, and you have to be careful how you deliver that content. So good interview to listen to with Jason. I thought it was a great sit down, and I think you're getting a lot of value from him. Before we get to that, remember to check out pod2pod.com, your go-to resource for all things podcasting. There you can sign up for our weekly newsletter, check out the latest headlines, browse our directory of podcast services, surf our calendar of podcasting events, and so much more. That's all at pod2pod.com. Here we go. Jason Hoke of How Stuff Works. Pod to Pod, very, very interesting guest we have today. Probably the biggest name that we've had on the podcast thus far. He is a digital innovator with over 20 years of senior leadership in media, which includes time at WWE, Discovery, and today the chief content officer at How Stuff Works. How Stuff Works has an amazing slate of podcasts out there, and they have done more than 650 million downloads across their entire network. Shows like Brain Stuff, Stuff Mom Never Told You, Stuff of Genius. The list goes on and on, all phenomenal shows. And we are very happy to have with us Jason Hoke from How Stuff Works. So first of all, congratulations, because you guys were very proud of some of the numbers that you put out there, and you were at the upfront. What are you seeing right now in podcasting as far as what you guys are experiencing with that growth? Is this sustainable? Is this just the beginning, or you think we're starting to peak already?
I think we're actually underselling it, to be honest. Yeah, I think the best days are ahead. If you remember back in, I think it was about 2005, the first podcast moment, the Adam Curry moment, if you remember, the Podfather. this was a big thing, right? There was a lot missing, though. There was a lot that we couldn't kind of move forward. So we didn't have a lot of the data. We didn't have a super big audience. We didn't have smartphones like what we have now. It was primarily a desktop computer type of consumption experience. And so I think we've hopefully tried to learn from some of those lessons while still having that small feel. So trying to get big but feel small. The podcast itself is a very personal, intimate experience, what I like to call an audio long read, where it's something I can go deep on. It's very relaxing, conversational, and I want that information. I don't want just 5 minutes. I don't want a 3-second Facebook video. I want to spend time with the host for 30, 35, 45 minutes, maybe an hour. And so, you know, I think, like I said, the best days are ahead. We have barely even tapped into drive time in cars, right? So podcasts, dashboards have just barely started to hit new vehicles. Smartphones will continue to grow. The awareness of podcasts continues to increase year after year. We've got about 58 million people who consume podcasts in this country each year, over 95 million who actually know what a podcast is or have consumed one in their lifetime. And I think that's only going to go up as people become a little bit more plugged into this stuff, right?
Have you guys done anything on that side of the market in terms of getting people to understand what a podcast is, how to in fact engage with it? Because like I said, the car experience is cumbersome. I put it on my, you know, hook. I set media to my thing and the Bluetooth connects it, but it doesn't feel intuitive. Like I'm still sometimes like, oh, just put on the radio, it's there.
Yeah, and but part of the issue is, especially millennials, like the radio is just terrible. Listening to the radio is a terrible experience. There's nothing on radio. I have a 1995 old school Range Rover. I bought a $35 Bluetooth device, and I listen to podcasts and streaming Spotify and the whole thing because I can't stand radio. So if you look at radio as a big, massive industry right now, if podcasts only got 1% or 2% of that market, we're big, we're massive. And I think that that trend will continue. It won't happen overnight, but from the audience size and then the monetization and kind of all the stuff that's going to follow, I'm pretty bullish about where we're going with that.
So I see you have an iDevice. Do you tend to favor the iTunes store when you're listening to podcasts, or do you have another podcatcher that you prefer?
I like iTunes. I've used it for years. I also tend to switch off with Spotify.
Okay.
Sometimes just as I'm mixing up both music and kind of podcast together. I think it's a pretty good service, and I like to kind of touch on all the different services so that we know exactly what that user experience is like.
Well, yeah, you have to.
You know, Stitcher and TuneIn and... you know, there's even some emerging players that haven't done a whole lot here, like a Pandora. Really interested to see what they do in the next couple of years.
And iHeart obviously making a much bigger push into spoken word, not just doing the music.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, a little bit of Amazon's Audible service that is now available for Prime, which is not exactly a one-to-one translation to podcast, but they're getting into that type of a thing. And for me, the more the merrier. It validates the industry, and we're now getting, you talked about some of our numbers, but when we talk about the overall industry, we actually look at each other and say, we want each of us to continue to grow, to be big. I don't consider it a competitive situation. When we have experts or celebrities or people who really want to, you know, kind of get involved in podcasting, or even anyone who loves to kind of come up with their own show, that just validates the approach that there's something here, both from a creator perspective, but also from an audience perspective.
And I guess, like you said, this isn't the first time we've had the big coming of podcasts. They first started 2005, 2006 with the iPod, and you know, Serial has sort of led the second renaissance around. But I feel like now everybody wants to jump in this game. It's very buzzy, and a lot of folks are just throwing content, you know, taking video, stripping the audio, and throwing that out and calling it a podcast. But do you think that works?
No, see, that doesn't work.
Okay.
And so, and this is the key moment right now. The barrier to entry creating a podcast is very low, but that doesn't mean that the quality follows or equals that barrier to entry, meaning you've got to be able to control sound. You've got to be able to put together a very compelling experience or content show. And how many podcasts have you listened to within the first 20 seconds? It just didn't sound very good. Some of our stuff 8 years ago didn't sound very good either, and we learned what it meant to really craft that experience, to make it listenable, to make it integrated with advertising, et cetera, et cetera. And I think it's actually an amazing, really golden age of podcasts right now because of all the, not just the ability to enter podcasts as anyone, but some of the amazing, magical podcasts that are coming out, high production, great stories. So we certainly fit part of the market. So our audience cares about things like history, stuff you missed in history class, science, technology, stuff you should know. But there's a whole mystery, true crime.
Yeah, the fiction stuff is going to be so much fun.
Yeah, the thing I'm most excited about, 30 for 30 from ESPN is becoming a podcast. Are you kidding me? So think about that amazing TV show and what that means. And part of the frustration, I only get about 10 of these a year, right? The ability to now tell those stories with less of a barrier to entry, to tell audio in a way that's never happened before for sports. It's barely even been touched on. Here's what sports has been doing for years. They've been taking talk radio and chopping it up and making it a podcast. Bill Simmons is the exception, but most of the other stuff is some version of PTI or something that's happening somewhere else.
Right. The content's already been produced, and we're just going to distribute it another way.
Yeah, and so take the days of Texaco Star Theater in the 20s with Milton Berle or some of the early radio stars. Sponsorships. Now we're seeing that again, right? These great stories comedy, drama, interviews, documentaries. It is wide open. And if I just crack open iTunes today and look at the podcast slate, I see 140, 150 different podcast titles across any genre, any style, any time. And you tell me that radio is going to win this game, I tell you, you're absolutely wrong. You're wrong.
In what you're talking about, I'm looking forward to, as a little bit of a nerd, I'm looking forward to the comic book industry really bringing back like the old Superman serials, but doing it with, you know, the higher production and, you know, better value. I think they're going to explode on this scene really, really nicely when they get their act together.
That's exactly right. So someone's going to say, I've seen a couple waves of this. I've heard a couple talking heads talk about comic books or Marvel movies or whatever that is. I'm going to do something different. And those are the people that sneak up on the industry. Serial snuck up on everyone a couple years ago, right? So I think a lot of people took that to heart, and they're really going back into the well and saying, what do we do next in the genres that matters to us? And how do we continue to tell different types of stories? And I'm telling you, it is almost impossible for me to even listen to all our shows, much less all the shows that I'm a fan of out there. And so, yeah, it really is a great time.
So as someone who's been producing content for a long time, not just podcasts, but really focusing on content for everybody, what are the biggest lessons that you take to heart and that podcasters should be thinking about when they go to produce a show? Not just, like you said, there's a low barrier to entry. I can do it, so I should do it. But what am I going to put out there that's actually going to stick? That's going to get not just say you to listen, but you to say, no, I want my friends to listen to what I just heard.
Yeah, I think there's a temptation to say I've got to get it all figured out by, let's just call it season one, episode one.
Right.
And it's just going to be either a hit or it's not. I would argue that we got it wrong at first. And so we thought that podcasts should be a 5-minute experience because it was digestible, short audio like the rest of the world was evolving to. Therefore, no one would ever want to listen to a 30 to 45 minute audio podcast. And it just wasn't true. And we learned over time what resonated with the audience. And it took us years. It took us years to get it right. I would encourage anyone creating content, creating a show, to invest, you know, more than a handful of episodes. Maybe a comparison I can give you is, I want to start a blog. And so everyone writes that first amazing blog post, and then they say, gosh, what am I going to do for the second one? Forget it. I'm never doing this again because I have no ideas. You've got to be able to stick with it. You've got to be able to believe in yourself. And you also have to be your worst critic, right? You also have to say, what is it that I'm really trying to do? What is the kind of story I'm trying to tell? And don't rush it. Some of the tips that our hosts give is exactly that. Consistency in storytelling and format, and consistency in release schedules. I know it's really obvious, but Josh and Chuck from Stuff You Should Know have put out a podcast every Tuesday and Thursday for the past 8 years. We've never missed a date. Wow. Ever. And that consistency has actually kind of riled up the fan base, because if it doesn't get out there by, let's say, 3 or 4 o'clock, they get emails. And that's so it takes time. The other thing I'll say is, we're seeing this everywhere, but you've got to be able to use all the tools. It's not just, hey, I want to get this on as a featured item on iTunes. You've really got to use social media. You've got to use all the outlets to be able to promote your wares. It's obvious, but we found as we've grown our audience the last 2 years that social has actually been a really important connection here for people to find your content, to be able to interact with that content, like it, share it, comment it, and pass it around.
So, but I mean, you have a massive brand that exists beyond just podcasting. Is that, you know, what if I'm just starting with a podcast? Does social work? I feel like it's very easy for me to, and this is proverbial me, the podcaster, to get likes, get a retweet, get a follow, but I still feel like there's something missing in that conversion. How do I get someone to actually hit play, you know, when I don't have an established brand to, you know, launch with?
Well, how do you get Twitter followers? How do you get, I mean, how do you build
I complain about the Jets all night and people start to follow me.
I mean, but that is part of the, if you want to be an expert on a particular topic and that's what you want your podcast to be about, you have to establish that credibility in many different areas. And I'm just using social as an example, right? You can't just walk into the echo chamber with two followers and the little egg icon on Twitter and say, now I'm going to do this, right? It's just like anything else. It's technology leaders who have an opinion about things that really invest a ton of time on Twitter or whatever that is, and they put a stake in the ground. And I would just encourage people to build those followings in those communities because a lot of podcasts, of course, are about not just general interest, but they're about specific topics. And you've got to become a known expert in that in order to find your right audience.
I've heard someone once say that you have to, in this world, you have to go out there and digitally knock on people's doors. You know, if you're not a big name, you're not going to get to the top of New and Noteworthy in iTunes. You're not going to launch with, 100,000 downloads, or, your Twitter is not going to have 1,000 followers at the end of the day, but you have to go out there and get those people almost individually. Do you think that's true for smaller players and just content creators in general? Like, is that what you're saying? You have to go to where your potential listeners are and say, I think you need to check this out.
Yeah, I do. And I think there's a dirty little secret here that I'll share. That secret is that if you do your homework, the ability to reach the people at iTunes and Google and Spotify is maybe not as difficult as what you might think. They're actually looking for content creators that aren't just the big brands. They're just not the celebrity folks that everyone knows and loves. But part of their job is to actually find that layer of people who are really, really good at this thing. So if there's something that is different, interesting, off the beaten path, it's a topic that maybe they're rolling up some special coverage on, I'm telling you, if you do your homework, they're going to find you.
So as far as, going back to how stuff works and some of the content that you guys have put out over the years, how did you know when you hit success or how do you know when it's time to, call it a day? There's been some recent news out of Gimlet. Famously, they canceled Mystery Show, even though it was highly acclaimed. I just read that they, put another one out to pasture, although they're sort of reconfiguring to make it work. But, you can't just stick with something forever. How do you know when it's time to invest more in something or call it a day?
Yeah, I mean, I think we should embrace, I don't even want to call it failure, but we should embrace the ability to try new things. And sometimes the window where you launched a show maybe didn't find an audience, or maybe you weren't able to monetize it, or maybe you weren't able to convert them into subscribers. We've shelved shows before. Some of it was audience reach. Some of it was that target. Sometimes a host left. There's no shame in that. And I think, not every one of our shows is going to be a twice a week, 52 week a year show either. Right. We want to do more seasonal stuff, more high production stuff, and test the waters on things we've never done before. We don't actually know if they're going to be successful in every case. We're going to stand by our work and our team for doing that. And if it doesn't work, we'll try something else. But the world's a pretty big place, and there's lots of opportunity, and there's no shame in if something doesn't become the mega million download hit.
What was the best thing you learned as you guys have been growing this podcasting network that, has become the mantra of the podcasting network, or, your go-to, somebody new comes along and, this is how you sort of talk to them, identify, like, this is what you need to do to make a success out of it. Do you have something like that at How Stuff Works?
I think for us, it's a couple things. One is consistency. Okay. So again, that consistent approach in what the, weekly experience is going to be. Who is the audience you're trying to reach? One of the other things for us is really around research and quality. So perfect example of this, Holly Fry, one of our hosts for Stuff You Missed in History Class, just random conversation one day with her. And I asked her something about how she does her research, and she kind of blurted out, yeah, I mean, each episode takes me about 20 hours of research. And I was stunned by that. And I shouldn't have been, but like that passion to be able to go above and beyond and become a credible person, to be able to say, hey, I just watched this topic. I don't know everything about history, but I'm going to walk up to this topic. I'm going to research it. I'm going to tell a really compelling story. She does a couple of these a week, and that essentially fills the whole week. That doesn't even include her time as an editor. Doesn't include her time potentially doing live shows, and it doesn't include the time to actually record the podcast
or promote it,
or promote it and be on social. Right. Exactly. Yeah. And so it looks really easy sometimes. The end product looks, you know, magical, and all the edits work, but there's a whole lot that has to go on behind the scenes in order to pull this off.
So with a project like that, that takes 20 hours to prepare for, and I'm sure, you know, probably close to another 20 hours to produce and edit and, you know, everything to get it out to work. What do you think about when it comes to advertisers? You know, how do you approach that relationship? Is it, we'll take whatever we're willing to get, or are you very selective with who you want to have, you know, sponsoring this content?
Yeah. So I think the other dramatic change, you know, in the ad industry is happening right now. So you're really looking at, a couple tiers or layers of advertisers. So you've got a lot of brands that are looking at podcasts as this, okay, they're having a moment. It's getting big and interesting, and I need to pay attention to this. There's the direct response folks that are that have worked with us for years.
Stamps.com and the right.
And they continue to perform like bonkers, and so they will continue to reinvest in our host's live reads in order to drive that audience to buy products and services. And then there's really a third category that's coming online now too, which is, I hate the word programmatic, but I'm just going to use it because it's out there, programmatic podcast inventory. And that inventory is unlike the display ads of programmatic that we're seeing on websites. It is primarily advertisements coming from terrestrial and streaming radio downstream into podcasts through dynamic ad serving. And so we're really looking at three categories. And so what are the challenges of each of those? The top line, the brands and the agencies and the kind of the premium folks, they want to be able to embrace podcasting, but they're not really sure what kind of metrics they're looking at. They hear this word download or listen, and that's all they really can grab onto. And they don't quite... They're used to something that says, I know what a banner ad does, I know how a Facebook video performs, I know what a pre-roll is, I know what geo-targeting is and DMAs and all this wonderful stuff, and I got nothing. I got nothing on the podcast side. That's changing.
Right, Nielsen is jumping in and starting to survey listeners.
There's actually just, and we're actually working on this now, but dynamic ad serving with all the wonderful dashboards like you're used to in all the other industries.
Mm-hmm.
Digital industries is coming to podcasts.
Oh, excellent.
Yes.
Maybe. I mean, that's great for the podcast. I've heard some folks say that one of the things they've loved about podcasting is it doesn't have the ads. It doesn't have the conventional ads. Like, I love a live read. You know, my live reads are great. Or, you know, I love a podcast host who talks about the product. But they're afraid to start hearing commercials versus a live read.
So even when we work with brands, we encourage part of the story for us to tell is, one, we've got the technology and the dashboards and all the things you expect over here, even though it's different. We've got all that. Second thing we say to them is, yes, but you need to maintain that live read. We need to be able to have a conversation with our listeners, and here's why. I mean, MailChimp, right? Serial and MailChimp got big, but they maintain that kind of funny, intimate quality to the live read. In a really unique way. Even that, yes, it was a commercial, but it felt like it was born just for that podcast. Yeah. And so that's our message that I think the industry needs to tell, is we don't just want the terrestrial ads coming in, you know, downstream and repeating that. Like, there is a format and a reason why podcasts are so different and amazing. So let's maintain that.
I want to go back to something else you talked about really quickly. You talked about consistency and the fact that you're thinking also a little bit more about seasonal stuff. And so, you know, one of the limitations, and this is particularly an issue with iTunes, is after a certain amount of time, there's no new episodes, it stops automatically downloading. So you have a season, everything goes well, you take, let's say, 6 weeks off, you have a second season, you have to re-earn all those listeners, I feel like. How do you, what would you say to overcome that, or do you guys have strategies in place that you're thinking about?
Guess we'll find out here pretty soon.
Okay.
Yeah, we launched a great show called The Stuff of Life, interview segments with kind of high production audio and sound earlier this year, about April. It was a 10-episode run and performed really well. Season two will come back here probably before the end of the year. And so we'll see how that, to your point, exactly how that performs. I think we get around a little bit of that just because part of our strategy as we launch new shows is to cross-promote heavily from our other shows. So having a really great install base, having social media hooks from all the other brands will kind of re-energize our base, and it kind of goes from there.
So are you having fun?
Yeah, it's a blast. I mean, part of what makes us have so much fun and be so special is just kind of all the platform stuff, right? So we have, certainly podcasts has been amazing for us for a number of years. You talked about the website, nearly 30 million people come to the website every month. It is, what is the modern day How Stuff Works? It's really storytelling across text, audio, and video. And so how do we kind of create all this unique content on the platform that consumers are actually getting into? This is one of the lessons I learned from WWE. So part of what I give Stephanie McMahon a lot of credit, my boss then, was she said, you can't dictate the platform that people should consume content on. You have to be able to create content for those platforms. This was probably 4 or 5 years ago. And it makes sense, right? If someone's a YouTube fan versus a Facebook fan or a Instagram fan versus something else, or maybe they just use Google more. You've got to be in all those spaces and places. And I think the mix of media that we have, again, across text, audio, and video, fit us really well. And so that is super fun. I would say that our text content, How Lightning Works, is not the most social media friendly article in the world. And so what we did over the last couple of years is try to reinvent or kind of tailor more content to be a little bit more modern, topical, but still have that How Stuff Works edge. Mm-hmm. And I think we're trying to do that across all the mediums, including podcasts and video.
So something that you said that was really interesting that it sort of negates my next question, but I want to bring it up anyway, is what do you think the future holds? But it doesn't matter because you're not focused on, your model isn't focused on the medium. Your model is focused on the content and transforming that content to fix the medium. So it doesn't matter what the future holds, you are going to find ways to adjust and deliver in a different way. And so maybe that's something that podcasters have to think in mind, that just because you're using a mic and earbuds in this case, you have to be nimble and able to pivot and sort of change the model a little bit.
You do. I mean, there's a couple ways we look at this. The world's a really big place, and so the amount of topics we can discuss is endless, and we feel like we've only hit about 10% of the total. Maybe it's 2%. We don't know.
Yeah, right.
And so our ability to kind of, we're not kind of backed into a corner, right? We can continue to talk about more stuff and keep going on stuff we're already doing. And a little bit off the beaten path is when I talk about video, there's Netflix and Amazon, and so you used to, if you wanted a TV show, you had to go through the old hierarchy of network television and get it shopped around and all that crazy stuff, right? Like someone over there is making a decision what's going to run at 11:30 at night on History Channel. And I don't know who that person is, but I've got to talk to three people between me and them. Now, Netflix, Amazon Prime Direct, Amazon Prime Video, we're learning a lot about that platform and we're able to create content directly there and be equal class citizens with the Grand Tour, the new show from the Top Gear guys, or we can create content that resonates there and become experts in the new TV. So I look at us like we're inventing the new TV and the new radio in our audio and video formats.
So now just a general question just about content creation in general, since you know that's really what the audience is, are content creators. What's the advice that you give to everybody when they say, I want to publish? You know, what's the, is it that you have to tell a good story? Is it you have to be passionate? Is you have to be the expert? Like, you know, somebody says, somebody fresh out of school says, I want to be the next, you know, serial. What, you know, with someone with your experience, what's your advice to that person?
So as tempting it is as it is to say more is better, scale. I think one of the lessons we've learned over the years is just because you're cranking out stuff doesn't necessarily always make it better. I would advise that you make something, even if it's one or two things, just about as great as you can make it. Start there and build from there, even though it may take you five times as long. Make it the best thing you can. We've scaled our content up on the website with original content, but also partners. And when we brought in partners, it just didn't have that same feel. It didn't resonate like our core experience, which is a deeply researched, highly curated, infographic created, highly sourced, deep dive on it, any topic you could imagine. When we tried to take shortcuts and we tried to kind of make that a really big thing quickly, I would say that we didn't always get it right. So I would really focus on making that one piece great. HowStuffWorks, the website, really started from Professor, whose name was Marshall Brain, the founder, by one article at a time, creating something that was great. Building. You got to start somewhere. And that How Engines Work article, which is really one of the first articles we ever created, became something else. And they used to publish, it was a big deal to publish one new article a week. Now, that sounds a little bit crazy in today's world,
right,
of 24 posted whatevers on Facebook.
Right, 14 articles have posted probably in this conversation alone.
Absolutely. And everyone knows the players and the culprits or whatever you want to call them. But I got to tell you, like, again, it's counterintuitive. You know, just like saying a five-minute podcast is, people only want shorter content. Because I read that and I saw Facebook, that's not true. So challenge what it is that really it really means to be in love with content and in love with storytelling and start there.
This has been a great chat. We've been chatting with Jason Hoke, Chief Content Officer at How Stuff Works, and you can find all of their great podcasts, all of their great content, howstuffworks.com. Jason, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.